We become like detectives. You and I are detectives going through people's lifestyle, their food, their supplements, what they're exposed to, their emotional beliefs, their thoughts, to really uncover what are the things that are causing imbalances. Would you agree?
Absolutely. I think functional medicine is not random supplements. It is pattern recognition. Every single person is so different. Like Mona, we could have two clients. One of my clients can have the exact same symptoms as another. One of them can have them from eating tomatoes because they have a histamine issue, while another person's because they're eating too much fiber. Like, there's literally no way that any one protocol would fit both people. And understanding anything about a person's body is so relevant to the treatment plan that there's just no way you could ever apply a true functional medicine or functional nutrition model without extreme detective work and kind of putting the puzzle together and making those connections.
My dear friend, new lifelong, where have you been all my life friend, Michelle Shapiro, welcome to Rooted in Wellness. We have so much to talk about today, but let's just start out with the foundation of the podcast. So this podcast is really all about ancient wisdom in our modern world and how we can become more rooted in ourselves, in our health, in our happiness. So let's start off the episode by talking about what are two or three things that help you feel really rooted in yourself and in your happiness and in your life.
I love that. So it's been almost corny. I've been talking so much about walking and I'm like, why did I get this like huge degree and like practice for all these years if the whole thing is walking? So for myself, if I do not walk a certain amount, for me, it's like really 10,000 steps is kind of where I landed. I just don't feel like myself and I don't feel well. So walking is all that, so to speak. And for me, it really does make me feel rooted and grounded in wellness. The other thing I would say is that for me to feel like myself, I need to be what I call working the phones. So when I'm not with clients and talking to them, I'm with my friends and family. You will find me on the phone with my friends and family. And that is like where I feel the most like myself, is just listening and talking to the people who see me for who I am. And it makes me feel, anything that makes me feel like myself makes me feel grounded. So that's where I feel the most like myself and the healthiest.
You're the first person to give such a unique, authentic answer. Oh my gosh, on the phone with the people that you love, the people who see you for who you are, like talk about a brilliant way for you to just shine your light, right? And that's exactly what you do online for so many people. You are so authentic in the way that you speak, and it doesn't come off in an approach that is startling to people. It really does come from this heart-centered approach. So that's a reflection of your community for sure. All right, so on the flip side, you and I have these insane healing journeys, which I'm convinced is what keeps us aligned with our purpose. We'll get to that. So you must know in your life when you're drifting from that then. Maybe when you're not talking to your tribe, when you're not walking. Do you catch the symptoms or what are the things that cause you to feel more uprooted?
It's whenever I notice a symptom that I know that I'm past my baseline. So I will actually say, and I almost have a joke that goes on with my husband where I'll say, you know what? I haven't noticed any digestive issues in so long. And by the time I say that is when the digestive issue is coming already. So that's when I know is when a symptom shows up. I have a very strong communication line between, and you do as well, Mona, of course, between my mind and body. So I get those signals and I take them very seriously. So I'll start to notice when any of those symptoms come up, it's kind of a call to go back home. Nothing will dysregulate me as much as sitting on my phone too much, looking at it. Now, it's very different if I'm talking to people. If I'm looking at my screen, scrolling on Instagram, I will face neck pain. That will result in some sort of dysautonomic function, which I know we're going to talk about. So for me, that's one of the most least grounding things in the world. And then I would say, you know, before I mentioned what makes me feel grounded is feeling like myself. If I'm doing things that are out of alignment with what I want to do consistently, it's so silly, Mona, but I hate sitting at dinners. So I need to like walk around and talk to people. It's the way I like to engage. So just sitting down in the same position for that long, if I have to do like three dinners in a row, I feel awful. So I just know my body and I know myself. So I won't book them in a row. I'll do a brunch one day if I have to. I'll do a dinner and then I say, I have to see you next weekend. So anytime I'm doing something that I know doesn't make me feel good repeatedly, even that being out of alignment, it really can create symptoms for me.
Let's take a quick break to talk about something that's made a huge difference in my skin health lately. A product called One Skin. If you're like me, always on the hunt for a wellness solution for optimizing your skin's health and longevity, you need to hear about this one. Most skincare products focus on surface-level results, but OneSkin goes way deeper, working at a cellular level for lasting results. Their amazing all-woman team of skin longevity scientists developed OS1 after testing over 900 peptides. It's the first ingredient scientifically proven to interrupt cellular senescence, a core aging process. As we age and get exposed to UV rays, our skin cells enter senescence. They stop rejuvenating and producing collagen and elastin like they should. And even worse, they release harmful inflammatory chemicals and cause neighboring cells to become dysfunctional too. It's like a domino effect that makes our skin age faster with deeper wrinkles, thinning, and sagging, what we all want to avoid. But OneSkin's OS1 switches off these senescent cells, getting to the root cause of skin aging. It helps our skin stay younger and healthier. And since skin is our body's largest organ, the health of our skin is absolutely critical to our overall health. That's why I personally love OneSkin. I've noticed a real difference in the resilience and youthfulness of my skin since using it regularly. As a Rooted in Wellness listener, you can get 15% off your first order with code MONA at oneskin.co/MONA. I really believe OneSkin is something that can benefit all of us on our journey to optimal skin, wellness, longevity, and just aging, feeling our best. Definitely check it out and see the difference it can make for you. Remember, go to oneskin.co/MONA. That's oneskin.co/MONA. Use code MONA for 15% off. Trust me, your skin will thank you.
Absolutely.
You got to come to the West Coast. We do walking meetings, hiking meetings.
You guys are hiking the Griffith Observatory. Are you kidding me? That's your lunch meeting. Yeah, I know. Exactly. Not New York.
I love that you said that because, you know, for me as well, I feel like there's this resonance within the body that just knows. It's like our spidey senses going off, like, oh, there it is again. There's that feeling in your neck. There's that feeling in your gut or any digestive symptoms. Because I think as practitioners, we talk about symptoms all day long to the people that we work with. But I think for the most part of the population, because there's so much happening in our world, you know, we've become so desensitized to this communication system from our body, which is a freaking miracle. Let's just say, like, our body's communicating with us all the time, but we've mastered kind of masking the symptoms, the emotions, the feelings that come up for what we think we should be doing instead of what our body's actually asking for. So that's probably a good segue. So you take on such a unique approach to nutrition. And I love that you really blend the world of functional nutrition and healing as well as our mindset and how that matters. But what led you into that work? And why is it so important to break away from this like tradition, dietitian kind of mentality? I remember when I went to school for nutrition, it was like the nutritionists against the dietitians that like, it's like, no, 100%. We can come together. But tell us about your story.
Yeah, I have lovingly called myself the anti-dietitian a little bit. I definitely believe that every single one of us has a seat at the table, and we are in such desperate need of healers and people who want to help others. So for one person to diss someone else in this kind of like credentialism obsessed world we live in, I think is completely ridiculous. And I think that we should all be so grateful that there are people who want to take their time to help others, and we should welcome help from every single person. So that's just something I have to say about that because I'm really, really passionate about it. Yeah. So I grew up in Queens, New York. I'll kind of weave my personal and health story together. I grew up in Queens, one of the most diverse, amazing places in the entire world. And I always lived in a larger body when I was younger. When I was going off to college, I kind of realized that as I'm going to college, it's not going to be as like, it's going to be a much more homogenous place. And in Queens, people are really valued for their uniqueness. Like, it was like cool to be different in New York City growing up, you know? So for myself, like, you know, gender identity, racial identity, body size, there was 5,000 kids in my high school. So it's like, there's so many different types of everyone that whatever made you stand out was actually, you know, an advantage. But I realized I was going to school at the University of Delaware, which is a much more homogenous place. And I realized like, if I don't lose weight before I go to school, I will not be socially accepted. Like, people don't know that I'm Michelle Shapiro, class clown. Like, they don't know these things about me. It didn't inhibit me in my younger life, but it did inhibit me going, you know, when I was going to school. So I lost, and this is like a trigger warning, I would never recommend this, but I lost close to 100 pounds before I went away to school. And it was probably in like a year's time frame through disordered eating and starvation. The entire time I was at college, Mona, I was sick. I had hypothyroidism, acid reflux, severe gut issues, severe panic attacks that would happen several times a day with vomiting, like severe symptoms. And every doctor I went to was like, why don't you lose those last five? And really what it was is my body was so dysregulated from that extreme stress and that extreme weight loss that it led me into basically being chronically ill the rest of my adult life. And I couldn't understand it until I sought the help of a naturopathic physician, Dr. Robert Kochko, who became one of my besties by force. I was in that session with him and I was like, we're done now. I was like, we are best friends for life now. You're not just my doctor. But it was when he kind of sat, we did a Dutch test and we kind of looked at everything. It was a 90-minute initial session that I think we went over into the 2-hour range. And I was like, oh, this is what I'm actually supposed to be doing. Because traditional dietetic schooling didn't sit well with me. And I often complained. I worked in nursing homes. And the last straw for me of why I left conventional dietetics was I would not give Ensure to long-term care patients. I just felt like it was very counter to what the work that I wanted to do. And then I left to pursue functional health as I had my own healing journey. I then wanted to help people in the same way. I had kind of a second health crisis a couple years ago. We'll talk about two related to histamines and long COVID. But that was what led me initially into functional dietetics versus that conventional dietetics degree, which
it's
I have. But
so yeah, don't important. Use. And I think that says just a lot about you, because often we go into these big school systems and there's a one cookie cutter approach to how we're approaching healing and well-being. But that's the exact approach that got me sick, thinking that I had to do something in a certain way to heal. And a lot of like the research, I don't know about you, but the textbooks that we had, they're like so antiquated, right?
So
I love that you said that this idea of conformity and you as a kid, how that has also now bled into how you lead as a leader and a healer in this world. And I think that says a lot, because when people look at, you know, practitioners like you and I think the misconception is that we've arrived. Here's Pillar Health. This is what it is. But I swear I got like every weird genetic thing that came up. Like I'm this highly sensitive person, which we'll talk about. And like I'm just affected by the weird stuff. But I'm kind of changing the lens in which I look at that. One, to not conform to the other healers that are out there. I think you and I are here for a reason, to kind of deliver a message based on our healing. And the fact that we're on this path because it keeps us students, it keeps us in practice for all of those things. So I love that you have that approach, especially. So let's flash forward then. You know, you and I share the story of COVID. COVID was, I thought it was fine. COVID felt fine for me. My body was strong and resilient to fortunately not have the same symptoms as a lot of other people did. But I didn't realize that I went into long haulers COVID. And that long haulers COVID, that ended up, I think I was just way more, my immune system was just so compromised that I became predisposed to mold. I had full mold exposure in my apartment. So this is over 2 years, COVID, long haulers, mold exposure. And I've shared this on the podcast before, getting over mold, doing all the hardcore protocols, the exact same thing that got me sick, hardcore protocols.
Right.
Now depleting even more, I stripped my system. I probably gutted all the amazing microbes in my gut microbiome with all these binders and modalities and stuff like that in order to heal. And now it's been a process of rebuilding. So share your story from that, because the timing of you kind of gaining so much traction online was with the rise of understanding long haulers COVID, but also histamine response.
Thank you for saying everything you just said. First of all, I'm literally actively nodding so hard and closing my mouth because I'm like, oh my God, Mona, what you just said is so beautiful. First of all, the conformist thing that you picked up on, that I'm very, very nonconformist. So yes, if you're telling me to fit into a box and not listen to myself or not listen to the people in my life, it will never work. So that is hard for me about the conventional education system. Absolutely. I had, lovingly, as you kind of just put together, the same mold vid puzzle, which is I had a mold exposure. I had exposure to COVID. And I really think of, and I want to do a couple like defining terms to help us here, but I really think of long COVID as a combination of a couple different syndromes. One of them is mast cell activation syndrome. I'm sure everyone's seen it online, MCAS, MCAS, we call it, POTS, postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, which is what we'll talk about, and then hypermobility. So that's kind of, and exacerbation of hypermobility symptoms. This long haul COVID as a, it's kind of a cluster of these different syndromes. Some people have one a little more than the other, but they deeply connect and relate. So I had this mold exposure. I was going to the best functional medicine doctors, best naturopathic physicians, and just absolutely destroy, like you said, destroying myself with mold protocols, detoxes, binders, everything. I got sicker and sicker. The more I went to functional medicine doctors, the sicker I got. And really, when I'm talking about these people in highly sensitive bodies, Mona, like us, a long time ago, we used to always say about functional medicine, we're the last stop when conventional medicine has failed you. Well, now the clients I'm seeing have been harmed by functional medicine. So it's like they did conventional, they did functional, and now they're sicker than they were before. And can you imagine paying thousands of dollars for these advanced tests to then get sicker? I mean, imagine the heartbreak and the fear in that if you're going to the practitioners who people say, this is the last stop on the train. So that's really where I've been. And you said something so beautifully, which is that it was the protocols themselves that actually made me sicker. It wasn't even mold. It was when I tried to kill the mold that I got sicker. And I can say why that happens too. So COVID as a virus attacks our immune system, as we know, and the organs of our body. But there was something really weird that happened after COVID, which is that people stayed fatigued, their hearts were racing, hives for months after. And we just really couldn't understand. There was one study in 2022 where they did statewide surveys and they found that up to 30% of people in each state who had COVID were experiencing long COVID. 30% of people. That could be 100 million Americans who are experiencing it. So as a definition, our mast cells are a type of immune cell. They're a type of a white blood cell that are really involved in connecting our body with the resources that it needs in times of threat. It's an immune response. Basically, the way our mast cells work is they're kind of like the guards on the watchtower of our bodies. So if there's a battle like COVID, let's say, mast cells are going to see that. They're going to, you know, deliver resources to the body where they need it. And I'll say how they do that. And then after, mast cells are really interesting because they stay kind of on guard. They're like very hypervigilant and they connect to both our immune system and our nervous system. So if they sense a threat is coming, they're going to fire out everything they've got from an immune perspective. The way mast cells work is there's receptors on the outside, and then they have these sacs on the inside, which have all these different chemical messengers inside of them. Histamine is one of those chemical messengers. So they will have something attached to the outside and as a result, mount an immune response. COVID and mast cells share a commonality in that one of the receptors on mast cells are this ACE2 receptor, which COVID attacks and attaches to. So the reason why long COVID happened is because normally we have an immune response and then our immune system's like, okay, that's done. But now we have an immune response and a nervous system response that cycles and perpetually keeps going. And the problem is that histamines, and those are only one of about 1,200 messengers that mast cells send out, histamines, particularly when there's too much floating in our bloodstream, can create extreme symptoms in people.
It's also a learned stress response from the body, right? If the body adapts to constantly defending itself, it's going to get stuck there because it's keeping itself alive, right? Exactly. So people started understanding this concept of mast cells, the concept of a cytokine storm within their body. So they're gradually starting to understand this, but they're not recognizing like just the impact of the smallest things that they could be doing every single day. And when we think about that concept of a mast cell, people always talk about your body defending itself or attacking itself. I think it's the most brilliant, like, what a gift, you know, magnificent ability for your body. It's trying to keep you healthy and safe. It's trying to re-regulate and move back to resilience, right? So I'm curious from your perspective in understanding, let's start with MCAS. Would you say kind of as you start to describe it a little bit, maybe give our listeners some understanding of how they can check themselves for this, is this a modern day problem? Like, did our ancestors have to deal with this?
So the discovery of mast cells at all happened in like 1890s, the cells, mast cells at all. Our understanding when we started publishing like papers on mast cells and like huge practice papers was like 2012, 2015, 2016. So our understanding of it is definitely in its infancy, but it's really good because we have a lot of really juicy information coming out that's really helpful. Do I think that people experience what is probably like mast cell activation disorder, MCAD? Maybe. What I think I view MCAS from a spiritual perspective as humans becoming incongruent with their environment. So we're incongruent with the amount of stress in our lives, with the extreme amount of like toxins, perfumes, even like artificial light and all these things. And it's our body is not able to accommodate those changes. So I do view MCAS as like a lifestyle and environmental mismatch from how we're supposed to be living. So more and more people have it. And, you know, when I first started practicing 11 years ago, you know, I think about clients back then and I'm like, maybe 1 in 100 of those clients were like what I would call a histamine-y type of client. And it's not just because I'm talking about it now, but all of my practitioner friends who don't work with MCAS at all are like, are all of my clients have histamine issues now. So I think that we already were on a slope of environmental mismatch, and I think COVID kind of blew us out of the water. So I would say, yes, more people have it now. And the types of stress we have on our physical selves and emotional selves is probably more as time goes on, I would say.
Which kind of makes sense, right? You know, from an Ayurvedic standpoint, we always talk about these imbalances or dis-ease within the body as a process of accumulation. And we've been accumulating our entire lives since we're in utero. And now we're learning even through our mother's and father's genetics, right? And when we think about our modern world, like there's so many assaults that we are confronted with every single day. When I was at my sickest, God, I was slathering my body in perfumes every single day. I was hardcore dieting every single day. I was wearing perfumes. There were so many exterior influences. And, you know, I think something that's so relevant for your practice and for mine is that ultimately we become like detectives. You and I are detectives going through people's lifestyle, their food, their supplements, what they're exposed to, their emotional beliefs, their thoughts, to really uncover what are the things that are causing imbalances. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I think functional medicine is not random supplements. It is pattern recognition, right? Every single person is so different. Like Mona, we could have two clients. One of my clients can have the exact same symptoms as another. Let's say it's like loose stools every single day. I feel like I'm like, can we talk about diarrhea on podcast? Sure.
I talk about poop every day. Loose stools.
It's not what you and I don't talk about every day anyway. But let's say one person's having loose stools, another person is. One of them can have them from eating tomatoes because they have a histamine issue, while another person's because they're eating too much fiber. Like, there's literally no way that any one protocol would fit both people. And understanding anything about a person's body is so relevant to the treatment plan that there's just no way you could ever apply a true functional medicine or functional nutrition model without extreme detective work and kind of putting the puzzle together and making those connections.
I want to take a quick break from today's episode to tell you the truth. Healing is so much more than just food and supplements. It's about community, connection, and accountability. My name is Mona Sharma, celebrity nutritionist, and that's why I built The Rooted Community, a space where we can learn, grow, and support each other on this wellness journey. Inside, you'll get access to exclusive content, Q&As, deep dive discussions, and real connections with like-minded people. If you're tired of going at it all alone and want a space where wellness finally makes sense, join today at monasharma.com, which kind of sheds light on the word syndrome. Right? So mast cell activation syndrome. From my experience, syndrome is another word for doctors saying, I don't really know what's happening, but it probably has something to do with this. It can't be an official diagnosis because one person's symptoms can manifest very differently from the others. Mm-hmm. So you do this so well. You talk about the different symptoms that people might be experiencing. So can you talk about what are the biggest ones that you see in your practice with your patients?
Absolutely. So I'll talk about the histamine client because I think it's really interesting also, or a histamine-like client. You know, Mona, like when my symptoms were happening with when I was having histamine issues, because I have MCAS, mine looked like rapid heart rate. Mine looked like extreme insomnia. Mine looked like tremors. So it's really interesting, because what I did was I actually had a chiropractic injury mixed up in all of this as well. I left a chiropractor's office. They had been adjusting my neck, but I didn't know that I had upper cervical instability and I'm hypermobile. Did not know yet. And they kind of like subluxated or dislocated joints in my neck by really aggressively with this like tool. They're like, wow, you have the tightest neck I've ever felt. And they did not do a hypermobility assessment, which I don't want anyone to get cervical assessment, like cervical work done like ever, but especially if you're hypermobile, never let anyone touch your neck. I left that appointment and my heart rate was 180. And I was not moving, sitting. And then I went to standing, it would jump up even higher. I walked straight to the ER. I don't know, I crawled to the ER. Let me be clear about that, because I had to get down on the floor at different points on the cement and like shuffled my butt there. And when I go there, what are they going to say if my heart rate's 180, Mona? They're going to say, go to a cardiologist. Here's the really weird thing. It's not a heart condition. So the trouble with these symptoms when it comes to histamines, and you can have histamine symptoms that look like basically anything, because our mast cells line all of our connective tissue, which is on our joints, blood vessels, bones, and basically every organ in our body has connective tissue lining it. So you could have symptoms in any organ. So the problem is you have rapid heart rate. Where do you go? You go to a cardiologist. They're not going to really be able to do anything, because the reason that you're having that reaction is from either a neurochemical reaction or a neurological or nervous system place. So we kind of need like a nervous system doctor in that situation. And yes, neurologists exist, but not in the treatment of, you know, these set of symptoms generally. So it's really hard, because the symptoms don't match up with what's going on inside. And it doesn't match up with the type of doctor you'd go to, which makes it really challenging to treat. And with histamine issues, I've seen urinary frequency. Yes, of course, I've seen the classic, you know, like when we think of cold with seasonal allergies, right? We think of like cold symptoms. I've seen, of course, rashes, urinary frequency, extreme diarrhea, vomiting, and a lot of anxiety and this very physical ants crawling under your skin zinginess, and a lot of insomnia. That's what I see in a lot of my clients. And again, these symptoms can look like, where are these coming from? It doesn't even make sense in our brains.
Yeah, and there's so many different symptoms. So last year I had a client who, she was getting up to pee about 10 times a night. Getting up, pee, go back to bed, get up, pee, go back to bed, nonstop. She didn't really necessarily have a lot of other symptoms. Like there was no rashes on her skin. She didn't feel any bloating or anything after specific foods. But then it also came out like, you know, with the hypermobility in her neck, also, like there were so many there different factors. Her hair was falling out also. But she also had major heartburn during the day, which is another symptom. Yeah.
I definitely want to talk about that too. Heartburn's a big histamine symptom, because histamines and acid reflux have a direct relationship. The more your stomach acid goes up, the more your histamines go up. Something else that has a direct relationship with histamines is estrogen. So this is really interesting, Mona. So I have clients, this is how I pick up, this is a little sneaky detective work that I do. And if someone's listening to this, I want them to hear this. You know, oftentimes we hear women having PMS symptoms, and that's the time in their cycle, their luteal phase, and especially PMS where they'll have symptoms. Those with histamine issues will actually get symptoms like the day their period ends. So it's like day six of their cycle, and that's because estrogen starts to rise again. The second rise in estrogen is in the mid-luteal phase, so around day 20 of their cycle. Whenever estrogen starts rising, that output creates an output of histamine. So it's really interesting, because it's so unexpected. Right. And I'll have clients be like, Michelle, why are you even asking me like what day of my cycle I feel anxious? What is the, it's not PMS. Don't worry about it. And I'm like, no, I'm actually not looking at PMS. I'm looking at those changes in hormones. So when we start to understand, again, what is the relationship between histamine and the body systems, we can do that pattern recognition that helps so much.
Okay. So woman then moving to my mind is just a little bit blown here.
I'm dying right now. That's so funny. Oh my God.
Exactly. Oh, I just love it when I learn something new. So what's incredible about that, because somebody who may have experienced MCAS growing up, didn't have mm-hmm. a practitioner who could help them diagnose. Now they might be moving through perimenopause or even menopause, and symptoms are going to completely shift again. And doctors are now throwing hormones at the situation, saying that they're premenopausal, when it's like, no, it's the foundational issue of the body that needs support. And that goes back to what we were saying about just throwing so many things at the wall, hoping for them to stick instead of addressing the actual resiliency of the body. Exactly. So, all right, we've listed these symptoms then for listeners. You know, they might not be able to go to a nutritionist, a dietitian, or their family doctor and say, hey, let's look into histamine tolerance and MCAS and POTS. What is a test that they can run? How are you assessing this in your clinic?
Sure. So there are some diagnostic parameters if you do have a doctor that you trust and can bring this to them. So you can measure histamine through urine, serum, and you can measure the other mediators that come out, right? So like you said, cytokines, you can measure things like, and you can't really measure for cytokines that well, but you can measure for tryptase, and you can measure for, and urine is usually the way that they do it. There's a couple other mediators you can measure for. The problem is that like histamines don't live in your bloodstream that long. So it's not like a perfect measure. The kind of gold standard is to do a biopsy either in your gut or of your skin and see the mast cell activity from that. So if you're already getting an endoscopy or colonoscopy because you're having gut symptoms, just ask the doctor while you're in there, do you mind biopsying for MCAS as well? So that's a really good trick that people can use. And it's actually a much more accurate test. So in my practice, if it's histamine issues and we're kind of, because sometimes you have to go off of suspicion also, and you have to test and trial things. You know, it's funny. I one of my dear friends is Olivia, who's Organic Olivia. And we made a joke because back in the day, she had this article before she knew she had histamine issues. She wrote this article about herself, and they asked, what's the one thing that you will like never travel without? And she said, Benadryl. And I was like, so I just want you to know that like people who don't have histamine issues don't need to bring Benadryl with them places. Like it doesn't help them. She's like, it just seems to cure everything. I'm like, it only cures everything if it's a histamine issue. And, you know, I'll give you another example of where this kind of applies and how I've deduced histamine issues. I had this client who is a very special person to me, and she had untreatable insomnia. And what I mean by that is she literally went 21 days only sleeping like 1 hour a night at most. She was in a state of basically like paranoia and hallucination at that point. And an otherwise like gorgeous, like full of life, beautiful human being. She was on 8 psychiatric medications to try to get her to sleep, including Ambien, Trazodone, Xanax. These ones, nothing would knock her out. I had a little bit of like a download about her because this was many years ago before I even, we really knew anything about long COVID. And I said, I think this is a histamine issue. So I gave her Pepcid, which a lot of people do not realize is actually an antihistamine. Pepcid, most people think of Pepcid as an acid blocking drug. Mona, she slept that night and she's never had a sleep issue since. So the deal with histamine issues is if you try everything else for them, but it's a histamine issue, it will not move the needle. So when I see someone starting to move the needle, and we could try, you could do a lot of natural, so you don't only have to use over-the-counter medications, of course, they're just sometimes are very necessary. But that's a little bit of a gold standard in my practice too, is that if I can see those distinct patterns where it's like, okay, you ate tomatoes and you were violently ill for a week, great. And kind of draw those patterns and conclusions and make those connections. Again, how someone feels during different parts of their cycle, how someone's digestion is affected by heat, stress, and things like that. I can kind of draw that picture together. Is this like a biochemical issue, like a histamine issue? Is this a blood flow issue? And we can kind of like pull that together. And I'm sure a language, by the way, that is a very rudimentary version of Ayurveda. Like, I love Ayurveda, by the way, but I would never claim to be an Ayurvedic professional. But it's a very, there's matters of heat, there's matters of blood flow, there's matters of life force. And these things, I think that pattern recognition becomes clearer and clearer in clients. Sorry for the long answer.
No, that's the whole intention of this podcast, though. Like, it's the integration of everything that you're talking about. And there's a time and a place for prescription drugs and yes, prescription meds. And my God, if they help you, then that's it. And continue to get to the root cause. So, you know, I would say over the past 6 months, it's become trendy for me to get a lot of questions about, hey, I started a histamine diet and this is what I'm doing. I don't feel a lot of differences, a lot of changes. Just because something is trending online doesn't mean that it's the thing for you. So key foods that you would tell people to opt out of. So a lot of vitamin C-rich foods, lemon, cheeses, fermented foods, green, sauerkraut, spinach. Any other triggers where you're like, you know.
This is the hard part about a low histamine diet is that by nature, it's a very restrictive and unhealthy diet because you're cutting out some of the healthiest foods in the entire world. And these are the foods, this is a big hint, Mona, for people listening too. If you do the things that are objectively healthy, but you feel sicker, you probably have a histamine issue. So that means you're going to saunas, you're going to do your exercise, you're doing detoxes, you're eating fermented foods, you're eating vinegar, citrus, spinach, tomato, gorgeously healthy stuff, and you feel sicker, it probably means there's a histamine issue at play. So while I don't love people being on a long-term low histamine diet, if someone, and I mean, I literally have clients who can eat one bite of a tomato and they are bedbound for a week, in those cases, it is worth it to kind of explore. Again, really like the heaviest hitters, fermented foods, kimchi, and that means kombucha too. Anything fermented, pickles, things that are in vinegar as well, like vinegar's top. Citrus, avocado, spinach, tomato. Those would be the ones that, and bananas are like very high for people. But I also would say cutting everything out of your diet immediately is also not effective. And again, you're missing out on a lot of beautiful foods then. And it will make it impossible to ever eat in a restaurant because they will use lemon and vinegar in every single food, essentially.
You got it. And I think any restrictive diet long-term, you're also going to impact your immune system and your gut microbiome for everything that we're learning about the diversity that's needed there also. The client that I was referencing, she literally would have like a teaspoon of lemon juice or a bite of an orange and she would be just sitting on a toilet forever.
Oh yeah. And the cramping that comes from histamines is like a different level. I cannot explain. Like it's, and like the loose stools and cramping, it's very frightening for people because it can cause like muscle contractions too. So it's really, yeah, it can be really severe. There are things we can do like taking like a DAO supplement, which is an enzyme that helps to break down histamines. And I'm sure DAO, I'm sure you guys have seen a lot about this before eating a higher histamine meal. And then I will say this, you know, our mast cells are not only responsive to food. They're responsive to our nervous system. They're responsive to changes in our environment. So they're responsive to exercise. So anything that is a perceived stressor on the body can trigger that histamine response. So that can be literal trauma and stress, or it can be something again, like hormetic stress and healthy stress, like exercise. It can be doing something that promotes detox, like taking a B vitamin or something that's objectively, again, these are objectively healthy things, but if your body is not able to receive and communicate that message properly and communicate back with you properly, you will end up with symptoms. So it's really about with everything with histamines is going slow, 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 and listening into your body. Because sometimes you can think maybe this was a food reaction. In reality, it was actually stress or something like that.
I cannot stress enough the people that I work with who are doing all the things and all the supplements and the diet, like there's so many things that they're incorporating because they hear that it's something that could be good for them, should be good for them. Just because it's good for one person doesn't mean that it's good for everyone. So I think that is such a good point. Less is often so much better. I just look at the relationship between us and nature. You know, we don't transition from, you know, spring to summer overnight. It takes time. It's gradual. And our bodies are, it's the same way. Like if we don't see and feel results in the moment, we often walk away from something instead of giving it the time to work and our bodies the time to heal. Do you find that rebuilding stomach acid in other ways can often reduce symptoms?
I would say it would increase symptoms, unfortunately. The problem is that because of this acid and histamine relationship, like someone taking betaine HCL or taking digestive bitters or doing like lemon water can actually increase histamine. So the way I view histamines kind of is you have to take the heat down before you bring the heat back up. So you have to address the nervous system and histamines. It's kind of like cool the body off, tell the immune system it's okay, we don't have to react, and then you can bring that digestive fire back because You need that Agni. You need that digestive fire. It is so essential. But I think it's different than, again, most functional medicine doctors want to jump into bringing the fire up first, but you have to cool the body off before you do that, which is challenging because from a TCM perspective or Ayurvedic perspective, I think of these conditions as definitely being conditions of dampness. So they definitely have that piece to them. And so you want to add fire, but the body's already kind of on fire. So you have to like cool it before you bring it back up, which is really complicated, but it's doable. It's doable.
It is. But the way that I see that, if you want to bring down the fire, I associate heat to electricity. When we think about nervous system dysregulation, like you literally are plugged into high voltage. 100%. And let's park that for a second. I really want to talk about the connection to nervous system dysregulation, but we said that we would talk about POTS. So yes, tell us about-
Well, this is where we bring in the nervous system dysregulation anyway. Yes, I want to too. I'm so excited. We're going to have one of my favorite words in this conversation, which is vasodilation. And we're going to talk about vasodilation. So when I think of POTS and like what a symptom set would look like with POTS, it's like someone goes into their shower and a lot of our clients will have experienced this. The shower's hot. The hotter the shower, the more this might happen. They look, they feel really scary dizzy. They leave the shower, they look down, they see their legs are red. So this is, and then their heart starts pounding after that. And what is happening inside of the body potentially, and this is something that would be very common in someone with POTS, is that we're standing in the shower. Histamines, something that I want us to keep in mind. Histamines cause something called vasodilation, which is the widening of our blood vessels. So if we're standing up and our blood vessels are wide open, blood's going to be like on a slide, right? Whoop, drop down to our feet. If we have autonomic dysfunction and our brain doesn't know, where do I send blood flow? How do I get blood back up here? Should the blood go to the heart? It's almost like gravity takes the blood for us and we don't have that pump to get blood back up. So what happens is you look down at your feet because there's blood pooling. That's what that redness is. It's actually blood pooling happening in your feet. Sometimes I have clients whose feet turn purple after a shower. And then what happens? Your brain is dizzy because it doesn't have blood flow and your heart goes, what the heck? Give me some blood up here. Starts pumping. So the way that POTS, this, and literally it's postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, which literally means you make a postural change. You go from sitting to standing and your heart starts pounding really fast. Tachycardia, right? The way that MCAS and POTS are related is through histamines because histamines cause this vasodilation. So if your blood vessels are wide open, and the reason why histamines want your blood vessels to be wide open is so that they can send immune cells, nutrients, and everything. It makes it really quick for blood to move throughout the body and nutrients and immune cells to move throughout the body. So the more that we have that constant vasodilation, gravity works against us. So a lot of the treatments for POTS in the conventional world are, how do we kind of, I joke and I say, it's like, how do you make your body a Go-Gurt tube? Like you wear an abdominal binder and compression socks and squeeze the blood flow up. You kind of like, that's exactly, you're just like squeezing blood. That's like kind of the goal with compression. And then also the recommendation is to increase your blood volume. And the recommendation for POTS, and people are going to freak when I say this, is 10 grams of salt per day, which is sodium per day, which is 10 element packets, LMNT packets. So yes. So that is, and people complain about one element being too salty, right? Even though I do like them, but think about that. So that's really to increase blood volume. Again, the goal is to increase blood volume. Now, POTS is not a cardiac condition. There is one type of POTS that there might be some blood vessel damage called neuropathic POTS, but generally in hyperadrenergic POTS and in the POTS that we know of, which is hypovolemic POTS, it really comes down to, it's a form of dysautonomia. POTS is a form of dysautonomia, which means it is a nervous system condition. It is not a cardiac condition. So let people sit with that for 1 second. So the reason the heart is not pumping is because the brain is not telling the rest of the body where to send blood flow. It is not because the heart is damaged. So this is why it's so tricky, because again, people will want to go to cardiologists. But for us to understand the nervous system, we think of the nervous system as being like this, I don't know, like, you know, this like, oh, I my nervous system's overactivated. I need to meditate or something. It's like, no, the autonomic nervous system is like in control of like our temperature regulation, fluid regulation, heart rate, like the most like what I call like the vital sign functions, the ones that will really scare the crap out of you and make you go to the ER. That's what your autonomic nervous system's in control of. So it's, you do have to work with the nervous system first in these conditions, but that's where, again, it's much more about the nervous system telling the blood and the muscles which to contract, where the blood to go, than the actual pumping of the blood being the problem.
What if true wellness wasn't about extreme diets or the latest trends, but instead about daily, sustainable habits that actually work? My name is Mona Sharma, celebrity nutritionist, and I have spent years blending functional medicine with ancient healing practices. And with the help of my colleague, Dr. Mark Hyman, we have narrowed it down to 12 essential wellness tips, the key things that I do every single day to support energy, gut health, and longevity. And I want to share them with you for free. Register now to get your copy of the 12 tips at monasharma.com/12tips. And start making small shifts that create massive impact. Your autonomic nervous system is your master control center. And this is what blows my mind for people to continue to brush off, you're stressed, go meditate, or for doctors to not really address this at every appointment, considering the rise of stress and anxiety-related disorders, blows my mind. And I know that this is going to change. So I'm sitting here, like, gripping my chair as you're speaking. Like,
that's what I was doing when you were talking before. I'm like, exactly.
So if you were with me, God, I wish you were with me. When I had my first heart surgery, the doctors were asking me, Mona, why are you crying? Why are you crying as you're awake looking at my screen on my heart on this massive screen? And I said to them, my palpitations are not going to happen unless I'm up and moving my body. Get me to bend down to pick up a pair of socks and my heart palpitations will start. And they thought that I was crazy because they thought that it was an issue with my heart.
With your heart.
In retrospect, it had nothing to do with my heart. When I went away to the ashram, it wasn't the food that got me healthy again. It wasn't any of those. I didn't do anything differently, except I shifted the state of my body, okay? And look, for listeners, I know a lot of people reached out to me daily pretty much. Like, I have heart palpitations. What did you do? Mm-hmm. What is it that worked? Every heart is different. But tachycardia, you've got to do your investigation to understand the sources of what are causing you issues. So for me, what's interesting is that my symptoms would dissipate if I was on a very hardcore restrictive diet. Hello, potentially histamine.
You probably cut out some histamine foods too.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I definitely was consuming a little bit more salt. I remember this was a time where my mom was giving me electrolytes and stuff like that. Like there's so many things that came into play. But when we think about then for the listeners, how are we testing for this? How do we go to our doctors and help them understand? There was one doctor I remember, she was a naturopath. And I do this with some of my clients. I get them to do a lying down to standing test to see if they experience the same symptoms. Don't do this alone. If you're somebody who does have this, make sure someone's with you. But how do you talk about this with your clients and how do you assess it?
100%. So we might notice some heart rate changes. I will always recommend going to an interventional cardiologist for actual diagnosis. So that's who diagnosed this. Diagnosis POTS, they will do something called a tilt table test. Just like you're saying, they lay you down, take you back up, see if you make these postural changes, what's going to happen with your heart rate. Absolutely. So that is possible. However, if you have a different type of POTS, something called hyperadrenergic POTS, which is basically that you have an adrenaline response from your nervous system and that response causes changes in your heart rate because adrenaline makes your heart pound, right? If you have that type of POTS, you actually might not respond to that postural test. But there are diagnostic measures. And I will say this, if your heart is pounding, Mona and I want you to see a cardiologist first. You have to rule everything out first in a medical doctor's office I want you to get an echocardiogram. I want you to get everything. This is when it's ruled out from a really good cardiologist, then I would start exploring things, you know, in other areas and arenas, for sure. So there is diagnostic capacity for that and some neurologists do as well, but some cardiologists. So usually my clients do have a diagnosis by the time they're coming to me, or they don't. And then we can work on, like you said, I'd like to know exactly when the flares happen because it's weird. Like you can have a POTS flare and an MCAS flare because they usually travel together. But they're like totally different symptoms for people. So I'm like, oh, this is a histamine day or this is a POTSy kind of day. And we kind of like play with that, but it's really about, and we talked about this before, that pattern recognition. And if it is happening during postural changes, do you need to stabilize? The one thing I wanted to mention before in the context of POTS is we were talking about when I had this chiropractic injury that kind of set me over the edge with all of this. I have hypermobility, which I have Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. So this is really why everything went so crazy with me heart rate wise. What do we talk about all the time in functional medicine? The vagus nerve, right? So if you have nerves in your neck and they're not protected because you have an inability to create connective tissue, or your blood vessels are leaky or looser, which can happen. If you are making, you know, pressure on the nerves, if you are basically attacking those are the nerves that control your heart rate, right? We know this. We talk about the vagus nerve and the heart rate all the time, but those are in your neck. So the nerves in your neck also are related to and involved in controlling your heart rate. So it's really important also that we acknowledge the physical form part of this as well. And that's where POTS and hypermobility tie in. And a lot of people with upper cervical instability will, a lot of people with POTS will have some upper cervical instability in the neck area.
Did you have a chiropractor who decided to take an x-ray of your neck? Did they manually assess it?
To understand that I had upper cervical instability, yeah. So I've got a bunch of x-rays, and you have to get one in motion also. Like, you have to go like this and then like this, because otherwise you can't see instability. It was like hard. I got MRIs. I got everything to make sure there wasn't other things going on, because my primary symptom in all of this was unrelenting dizziness. I was dizzy 24 hours a day for years. And the heart rate stuff was newer, but the dizziness was so perpetual and really scary. Dizziness is scary. It's really uncomfortable.
Absolutely. It's dangerous too. I can't believe
exactly.
That. What a story. What a journey. I'm looking at this through the lens of our listeners who, you know, I'm sure you do as well, I hear from so many women who just feel like crap, like they're just doing all the things. And to talk about hypermobility, when I think about a stress response and our spinal column, right? Everything is connected. You talked about the vagus nerve, our digestive system. If you're not digesting food properly, it could be related to your nervous system. And now with your neck, also your posture, over time, since the time that you were a little kid, the way that your body metabolizes stress, if it's altering the state of your posture over and over and over again, your posture will become adjusted to live in a dysregulated state also.
Absolutely.
Which impacts every nerve in the spine, which branches out to every single system and organ in the body. So are you seeing a practitioner consistently?
Yes. So it's really interesting. What is one of the best things we can do for hypermobility is, since we basically, hypermobility can be a genetic condition where you can't grow connective tissue properly. And again, connective tissue stabilizes our entire body. Again, it's part of our joints, bones, blood vessels. It's very structural for our body. So, you know, we kind of end up being like bobbleheads if you are hypermobile. So, really the best thing is building muscle, because muscle holds you together. If your body can't hold itself together through those bones and joints, you need something to stabilize you. It's almost like putting bricks in there, right? To help keep the column standing up if the columns were kind of like loosey. So I work with a virtual hypermobility. She's actually a chiropractor by trade. Her name is Taylor Goldberg. She's the freaking best. She was one of the first people who like saw me, and she's the hypermobile chiro on Instagram. But I do training, and I was at the point, and this is kind of the part of the story where I want to get like so real. I left that ER. They gave me like propranolol. They gave me a beta blocker. And they said, see you later. Your heart rate's high. I went home, and I had to basically, to get from my office, from my bed to my office, I had to lift myself onto a computer chair using my arms so that my legs didn't detect a postural change, essentially, and then wheel myself to the bathroom. And it was months. Mona, I was wearing a neck brace with clients. I said, I love you guys. I couldn't hold my body up because my nervous system was not, like, I had no stability in my body. And so I would just see clients, you know, with my neck brace on. I'm like, you got to take me like this or leave me. And I will tell you, Mona, that there was a moment, I remember it like yesterday, I looked at myself in the mirror and I was like, you're just not going to make it through this. I just don't know how. And then I heard another part of me that was like, don't ever say that again. You will never say that again. Here's the tricky part of these conditions being nervous system conditions. If you believe you're not going to heal, you will not. And that is freaking scary. And I hate to put that burden on someone who's already sick. You have to be like toxic positivity with these conditions because they hear you. So your body will respond exactly in that way. And since you have these extremely frightening symptoms, if we react to those frightening symptoms with fear, the body goes, oh, I was right. It was really bad. Let me do it again. So there's something very sinister about these like kind of long COVID symptoms and why you have to be so on your game. And listen, I'm a Jewish New Yorker. We are not by trade very positive people, okay? It's actually by trade, we're very negative people. That's kind of like that's why we're funny, right? That's just how we are. But I had to like change the way that my brain was operating. And there's actually like for POTS and MCAS, there's actually like brain-based programs called limbic system retraining programs, like the Gupta program, DNRS, Primal Trust, because all of them start in the brain. So if you hear yourself saying, oh, you know, Mona, like your clients, I'm never going to get better. Like we got to cut it out immediately. And I know it's counter to what we're actually feeling, but you need to go against that instinct and just say, I'm going to fight and I will figure this out and I will get better. It literally starts the healing journey. I've never seen someone heal from these conditions without that mindset change. Never.
I have to tell you about my latest obsession. IM8. This is not your average supplement company. IM8 was born from a collaboration from top scientists, medical experts, and even David Beckham. They created a line of products that take a holistic, science-backed approach to health, and I am hooked. Let's start with their daily essentials drink. This supplement is packed with 92 premium ingredients, including clinical doses of things like CoQ10 for heart health, MSM for joints and muscles. It's basically like getting all of your daily nutrition in one delicious scoop. I love mixing it into a smoothie. It has this great chocolatey berry flavor that I look forward to every day. Plus, it gives me sustained energy without any jitters or crash. They also have a daily longevity capsule that supports healthy aging at the cellular level. It has ingredients that help with DNA repair, clearing out damaged cells, and it boosts mitochondrial function as well. I've been taking it consistently, and I can definitely feel a difference in my mental sharpness and my overall vitality. What I love about IM8 is their commitment to quality. Every ingredient is meticulously sourced, non-GMO, and free from any harmful additives. They use advanced technologies like liposomal delivery to make sure that your body is actually absorbing the nutrients. And as a pending B Corp, they prioritize sustainability and ethical practices. I can't recommend IM8 enough. It has simplified my supplement routine without compromising on effectiveness. Head over to im8health.com and use code MonaSharma10 for 10% off your first order. That's im8health.com, code MonaSharma10. Trust me, your cells will thank you.
This is the future of medicine. That. We need to replay that, and that is the future of medicine. Gosh, even in my nutrition journey, my second year after becoming a nutritionist, I became an NLP practitioner because I quickly understood the people that I was attracting were very similar to me. My blueprint was anxiety, and I would affirm it every day. Oh, I'm so anxious. Anxiety is my blueprint. It's just the way that I am. Affirm, affirm, affirm. And you know, this is one of those areas. Science is finally starting to validate the power of our thoughts and the impact on our body and how our body listens. Some things we just don't need studies for. Okay? Like we can take someone's body and put them into a situation where they feel moments of peace. And if you can do that on your own, you don't need all of these other programs, but you just have to be so mindful of what they are. Because the second, and for anyone listening too, if you're identifying with any of the symptoms that Michelle has brought up, that you've brought up today, recognize that. Because the second, mm-hmm. for me, when I identified with being, you know, being somebody who was on a heart medication, somebody who had heart surgery, had a heart problem, that meant I was sick. I was perpetuating the feeling of being sick all the time until someone really pulled me out of that. And I want to hover back on the state of your spine too, because I think this isn't about going to a chiropractor and getting just like, you know, the chiropractors that just give you generic adjustments. They go in, they snap, 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 snap. Our spines do not need to work like that. That is not a sign of longevity. Work with a practitioner who understands why you're out of alignment, where it comes from, what's the learned behavior in your body to get to that state. 100%. So here's what's fascinating. So recently I had an x-ray done of my neck. Yeah. The curvature of my spine is going in the opposite direction.
Oh my gosh.
So when we think about all the nerve endings in your spine, right, that goes up to your brain. That affects your amygdala. Your amygdala is associated with anxiety.
And it's a part of your limbic system, which we mentioned before. This is really important, especially in these chronic conditions. So we have parts of our brain that are responsible for sending the signal to our nervous system, to our nerves, to tell our body what to do in the rest of our body. There's a compilation of brain structures, our amygdala, hippocampus, and hypothalamus that comprise what's called our limbic system. And our limbic system assesses for threats using memory. So here's the problem. Our nervous system and our limbic system only learn by example. So they are so smart that they don't believe what you tell them. They believe what they see. So the problem is that if you chronically have symptoms and then you chronically react to them, the limbic system's like, oh my gosh, I never want that to happen again. Let's be very scared of that thing happening. Let's be very scared of tomatoes. Let's be very scared of these things. So you have to actively go against what those brain structures are telling you. But this nervous system, limbic system, and postural piece are intricately related. So I just emphatically agree with everything you just said. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think it's such a big takeaway for people. So especially when we're talking about histamine intolerance and it's a food issue and I can't have this, really recognizing is my nervous system trying to communicate with me that it's stuck in survival mode, right? Exactly. And this could also manifest as anxiety, as brain fog, as chronic stress, postural stress that are kind of in disguise, right?
Yeah. I also want to say that the nervous system conversation online upsets me a lot of the time because it's so not about the core of what the nervous system dysregulation is. For me, the word that comes up around the nervous system is safety. Like you have to find a way to feel safer, and that looks different for every person. It's not like putting ice on your face, right? Like that's not nervous system regulation. That's not It's nice. Like I like the fun tools too. I think there's like great tool humming. Like there's a lot of beautiful tools, but the core of nervous system regulation is finding safety inside of the body that you're living in and finding safety outside of your body. So whatever that looks like, whatever you need to do to get that. And I think living authentically also really helps with that, but you have to find your safety. And again, I almost say it in like a demanding tone because you can do all of that fun stuff, but if it's not literally making you feel like you're connected to your body and safe, it doesn't do anything. There's no point in any of it.
Do you know that there's some of my clients that I won't even recommend meditation to? And I'm a meditation teacher. And the reason why is because the analogy I give, it's like telling somebody who's obese, just go eat salad. Just eat the salad. It's going to make you lose all the weight. Mm. That's not the problem. They're not sick or ill or dysregulated because they're not meditating every day, right? And I think for safety, I've shared this a few times on the podcast, where for so many years, I wouldn't give myself permission to talk about the things that were upsetting me. My mom is somebody who had all of this trauma in her childhood and growing up that led to an autoimmune disease. And I would often think like, and just looking at world events today, right?
Sure.
We're so blessed. Like, I'm so blessed in this life. How can I not feel safe in my body? How can I complain about the issues that I'm having when there's so many people out there who are suffering? But a nervous system that feels unsafe for whatever reason, no matter what happened to you, if it was a learned response, that's all your nervous system knows.
That's all it knows.
Exactly. Yeah. And like words like trauma, and they're just words to describe the same state within our body. Or what's the other word that everyone's using? Inflamed. I'm inflamed. No. I'm inflamed.
Now you're triggering me. Okay. Now you're just triggering me.
Yeah. And so it's such a buzzword these days, but people are ignoring, well, what else is causing you to feel inflamed? And the digging is really, really necessary there. So let's talk about that feeling of safety then. When you're working with your clients, rather than feeling overwhelmed at all the things that are triggering them, that are causing them imbalance, how do you help them navigate wellness without falling into so many extremes?
Yeah, I am a big, and you picked up on this before, I'm a big nonconformist, big rock and roll girl for sure. And you have to like know what your voice responds to. So a lot of safety comes from accessing and listening to your internal voice. You know, Mona, like this is a sensitive thing to talk about, but a lot of my clients who have MCAS end up in like coercive relationships where they're people who are actually very type A, perfectionist, really like overachievers, but they end up in relationships with people who have like coercive control over them, emotional abusive relationships. And I've watched so many clients, like when I ask them, like, what is your body communicating with you? And what does your internal voice sound like? They have no idea what that voice sounds like because someone else's voice is in the way. It could be a parent, it could be a partner or something like that. But building that self-trust with yourself is safety, and finding your voice, or really accessing it, because we all have, you know, that internal voice, and that internal voice that serves our greatest good, I think, is the first step. So I will have people just literally like tap their heart and say, what do I need? What do I need? What do I need? Until something comes up. But I agree that like something like meditation can be too harsh for people because you have to sit. Meditation is not designed to be pleasant. It's designed to be tolerating discomfort. And sometimes the discomfort is so extreme to begin with that it makes people feel more unsafe. So I think just anything that eases you into accessing your voice and harnessing your voice and listening to it strengthens you in every single way. So that's, I think safety comes from self knowing. There's like, you know, the movie Les Mis, like, and the play Les Mis. In Les Mis, there's a line at the end of it, like to love another person is to see the face of God. And I always feel like it's to know, you know, my interpretation of that also is like to know someone or to know yourself is like the greatest act of love and healing that can happen. And that is like, that's the nervous system safety, right? Is to listen to yourself, to be able to block out everyone else and listen to your own internal cues. Can you imagine that validation and that trust from self? If we can hear ourselves like for the first time, like that is the path forward, is that self reflection and communication being built.
Oh, that was beautiful. So beautiful. Yeah. The analogy that I was thinking of listening to you is, you know, we live in a world where we're so focused on doing, right? And getting ahead and accolades and constantly thinking about the future, which is a stress response in and of itself, that so many people, when you're talking about this idea of embodiment, not going to deal with that now. I'll deal with that later. I'm too busy.
Right.
I'm using my hands to shove emotions down into my body. Not going to deal with that stress now. Not going to deal with that trauma now. I'm too busy. And so we've given so much control to our intellectual body, right? We're in our mind all the time. And posturally too, what are we doing when we're so focused on the future? Our chin is moving forward, right? And we can see that in people in their posture today. So I think that when we speak about rebuilding trust in our body, it's simply learning how to come back into your body. And that could be something like a gratitude practice. I love that, tapping over your heart. First thing in the morning when I wake up, I just like put my hand over my heart to feel my heartbeat. That gets you in your body. Or gratitude practices are really important. But I'm saying this for people who are listening, who might be at a point where you brought up a great point of whatever programs that you have, just kind of maybe it's time to question, like, what are the beliefs that I have that might not be true anymore? Maybe I've been living my life a certain way that might not be working for me anymore. Or maybe, you know, something that was instilled upon me as a little kid that I thought I needed to be successful, happy, or loved, that might not be working for me anymore. Just taking that ownership.
100%. And again, you know, if I had an internal voice, Mona, that was like, you're Michelle, you're wonderful and everything's okay, I would be like, shut up. Like, that's so, you know, don't talk to me like that. Your voice has to be real you. It has to be the you that makes sense, the language that makes sense. And it has, you'll know, because you'll be like, oh, I recognize that person. So it's important also when you're bridging that communication that you are talking to the most you-ish you that there is. And I wouldn't listen to, I'll always bring up rock and roll music and I listen to emo and rock and roll music. It's like the only music I listen to. But if like, I knew also in that day when I had that, where I looked in the mirror and said, you're never going to make it through this. I was like, all right, we're listening to Tom Petty, I Won't Back Down. We're listening to like those things that stoke the fire of rebellion in me, because that's what gives me life force. Like, rebellion gives me life force. It's true. But for other people, hope gives them, you know, life force, and love and mushy, soft things. So you have to know, like, what is the language of me and what actually do I need versus someone else? Because we are all so different. And that's what makes us all so beautiful.
Have you ever done your core value elicitation? Do you know what that means?
Yes, but it was so long ago. But yes.
It's a modality that I use with my clients and understanding, because it helps you understand your behaviors. So yeah. I would be so curious for you. Freedom seems like it's a...
Oh my God. It was very high. You know, it was not like appreciation of beauty or something. And I was like, oh, that's funny. It was like, yes, it was freedom is a very, very high on my list and very high on my list for my clients. It was like number one, I think. You're 100% right.
Well, there that's you go. So well, so many people that I work with also, it's this freedom that they need to have. And yet here we go out into the world to heal restriction, being told what we can't do. And it's like that will trigger the body into thinking, oh no, she's doing... I'm losing my freedom. And that exactly will... Right. Yeah, further cause more imbalances.
It has to come from our clients. We know that. It has to come from them. We are the facilitators. And that's just what coaching is in general, by the way. Coaching is never just giving recommendations. It's about having people source the recommendations from themselves and being facilitators and doing that.
You got it. You know, I caught myself saying once, like, wow, I really, after some visits with my clients, it feels a lot like life coaching. And
of course.
Yeah. I had to do a reframe, though, because it's not life coaching. I think in the same way that you and I went to school to learn modalities for how to heal, when we're coaching other people, we're coaching them in a means to understand their bodies. And it's right. Just coaching. And a lot of people just need that reflection for themselves personally. So it's an honor and it's a gift.
It's finding like the game map, right? Like everyone has a different landscape. You're basically learning the game of their body. Like Mona, again, I have clients who like jumping out of an airplane and that makes them feel good because it excites them for whatever. Like every single person, every single thing they do is going to have a different reaction and response. It's our responsibility to help our clients find out what's their deal. What is their thing? And what is their body reacting to? And what is the environment of their life?
So can you paint a picture then for a lot of the patients that you work with, the clients that come in, you're addressing their MCAS, you're addressing POTS, you're addressing hypermobility, you're addressing the buzzwords of inflammation. What's on the other side?
You know, in the best case scenario, well, this is the funniest thing, and I'm sure you see this all the time. There's a lot of side effects of healing too, right? Like people get divorced from their jobs and from their bad partners. Like people live a life that appeases their inner child. People live a life that feels like them. But in addition to like the physical healing, I think the biggest gift that people give themselves in the journey is not having to think about healing at the end of it. Forgetting what a symptom was even like. You know, if I have clients who have severe insomnia and then the next session they come in and they don't mention sleep for 45 minutes, I won't even say it to them to see. And I'm like, did you sleep this whole time? You didn't think about it. The freedom of not having to be bogged down by thinking of how to feel and how to heal is such a blessing that people can actually focus on like art and hobbies and friendships and all of those things that really make them a human and make them be a person. So we heal really hard so that we don't have to be healing forever. And I know healing is a process and it's not linear, and of course, but I don't want people to be in the wellness world. Like we're in it because we work in it. I want people out of the wellness world after, and I want them living outside. So that's, and I've seen the most amazing things, you know, outside of the symptoms going away, because I'm always confident we'll get the symptoms to go away. I feel like that's like the easier stuff. The harder stuff is living a life that feels like it's full and a life that's theirs. So that's like the other side of the rainbow. And it's like insane to see these huge life changes that people make.
That's a good reflection. Yeah. Cause for some people, it's not just a healing journey. It's a complete reset of how they live, how they think, their environment, their community, the people that they spend a lot of time with, the books that they read, the music that they listen to, right? It's such a big picture. And this is honestly, Michelle, what I love about you so much. I say all the time, we talk about functional healing, we talk about integrative healthcare, but no one's actually doing it. There is zero integration in all of our parts, in all of the cells of our body. And I think that through kind of this awakening that you have really been an expert in talking about even the concept of a mast cell and how they react in your body, right? It's communication within your body. It talks to every part of you and how you're feeling. So I'd love to have you back on.
I can't wait. This is the best. It's like the best. It's my best day. I can't believe it. We had the best time. I love you so much. This was so wonderful. I'm so grateful to be here. I will come back anywhere. And it's so funny, Mona. Like if you think of our life stories and our paths, like we were in different places, experiencing different things, like different timelines, but we come to the same moment and understanding, which is that like we are all these whole creatures and we are connected to Earth. We're connected to each other. And when you kind of see the world in one way, like every healer sees the body in the same way, which is really cool. Like we have different educations, different timelines, different places, but it comes to the same thing, which is that people really matter. And that if you look at someone, you'll be able to see what's going on with them. And I think that that's like the beauty of healing overall is that it doesn't matter what education you get because you end up in the same place, which is why I am so not a credentialist at all. I'm like, oh,
yeah,
get over it. I'm like embarrassed. I'm a dietitian sometimes. I'm like, who cares?
Yeah. Yeah. Give me an expert if I'm having a heart surgery, repairing a bone.
Surgery and like really intense infections. Thank you, modern medicine. I love you. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. And, you know, through the healing journey, the feeling I think that you and I are talking about, when you find your tribe, it's just following the nuggets of the people that make you feel like you again. And when that happens, you're aligning with this concept that I talk about all the time, which is you are the healer. You are your healer. All of these experts and coaches and guides and doctors are guiding you towards wholeness, but you have to make the decision to follow it. So find your tribe.
100%. And the one thing I'll say is my disappointment in what functional medicine has become is vast because at its core, it's about the wholeness of us, not about thousands and thousands of dollars of tests. And don't go to practitioners who are just running tests and are not seeing you.
That's and getting you supplements. Supplements is...
Exactly. Just supplements, tests, supplements. That's conventional medicine. That has nothing to do with functional medicine, in my opinion. So I hope we can all turn a corner in that way. And we'll keep screaming about it until it happens.
All right. Tell us where people can find you.
Absolutely.
Tell us about this amazing quiz that you have on your website.
Ooh. So I created an information center called the Highly Sensitive Body Hub. This is for people, it's like a one-time fee for people to have access to loads of information. We have 14 different practitioners who've contributed to it about MCAS, POTS, and long COVID and hypermobility. When I was looking for answers to what the heck was going on with my body, I could only go to Reddit. That was the only place I found Reddit, you know, answers. I would say, why am I dizzy? Reddit, you know? And so I basically wanted to create like an information center that's kind of like a Reddit where you can search by keywords, you can search by symptoms, or you can search by conditions and syndromes. I have my own practice where I work with clients one-on-one. I have myself and four other amazing practitioners. So it's five of us working with these conditions. And then I have a podcast called Quiet the Diet. We're on a break right now. Mona, you'll obviously come on the podcast when we start recording again, duh. You can check out all of our past episodes for Quiet the Diet as well.
Amazing. I was going to invite myself, so thank you.
You don't have to. You don't have to. Trust me, the second we start recording again. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that quiz. I think for a lot of people, if you're questioning if you're highly sensitive or not, it's so great. You have so many great resources as well. So I would come into your community to hang out with you. But in wrapping things up, I want to ask you just a couple of rapid fire questions.
Yeah.
So what are the most common mistakes or misconceptions that you're seeing women make with their health?
You mentioned it before. I want to talk about perimenopause for one second. Perimenopause, I know, whew, we're both getting heated. Perimenopause is not a thing. Let me explain what I mean by that. It is a thing in that it, of course, medically exists. It so medically exists, but it is not a thing in that it's its own entity. So you cannot attribute every symptom you have to, I'm in perimenopause, because the experience of perimenopause is not universal because it could be a 10-year experience. So listen to your symptoms, not diagnoses. Like, of course, you can get diagnoses in doctor's offices, but do not become a doctor. Everyone's saying, I'm MTHFR. I'm like, you have a genetic SNP and now you're like, you are not a diagnosis. Don't get tripped up by the marketing language online. That's like, this is the perimenopause course. This is the whatever course. Listen to your own symptoms and make those assumptions. And medically, perimenopause is extremely real. Trust me, I'm not doubting that, but you are not perimenopause. You are a person who is in a transitional time in your life, and identifying as anything, I think, really takes us away from healing. So that would be a huge pitfall I'm seeing recently because it's been constant online.
Yeah, but it's another way to diagnose, right? People are looking for the thing. Oh, that's the thing. That's what it is. That's what's making me feel like garbage about myself. Oh, I love that you brought that up. You have to come back because, again, associated with nervous system too, right? If you're completely dysregulated, your body's going to be under stress. You're not going to be able to produce the hormones that your body needs for the time that you're in. So, okay, I'm going to stop talking. Okay, if you had to pick something about modern medicine that's exciting you, what would it be?
I would say safe about it and its advances. I think in cancer, like a lot of the new like immunology based interventions, like my aunt has glioblastoma cancer, unfortunately, for 4 years, which is actually pretty amazing because of a lot of innovations in modern medicine. So I think there's some pretty interesting things that are happening there. And then I'm also excited about all the new research that's coming out about MCAS from the modern medicine space as well in long COVID.
Yeah, I love it. And I'm sure you're going to broadcast so much of that. Thank you. Let's say this is the last one. What are three things that we can do right now to optimize our health?
So I would have people literally take a piece of paper and divide it one side and one side or cut it in half. And I want you to write down, make a picture of your body, right? Draw a little stick figure. And then from head to toe, write down what your symptoms are. Head to toe. That's the left side of it. On the right side, I want you to write everything that you're doing to address what's going on the left side. And then cut that in half and then write on the bottom, what else can we do to help you? This is where you can inventory what you're actually doing. Because of course, we have a lot of clients who come and they say, I'm doing everything right. But it's like, well, you're sleeping 5 hours a night and you're not connecting with people and you're in a really restrictive food state. So I want people to inventory their health and their life and then write, because I promise people know what they need, even before you go to a practitioner, write down what you're doing and what you need to add in. Start there. That's what I would tell people to do right now. And I'm going to tell them to do nothing else besides that.
I love that. What a beautiful practice. The cool thing about that is you are encouraging people to take ownership of their health. I'm sure that even through that practice, which I hope listeners will do today, is you will be able to connect the dots to your symptoms and your environment, your actions, the things that you're doing that you might know already that aren't serving your health. So I love that. Thank you. Good takeaway. Okay. I adore you. Until next time.
This was like freaking amazing. This was just like the highlight of my day. I can't wait.
Same. All right. To be continued. Thank you, love.